This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with political consultant Ray Strother. He'll have some thoughts about what's happening in Congress and with the president regarding actions pertaining to Syria and how this is evolving into another dispute, or perhaps a truce, between the U.S. and Russia. Also on the show, Kay Goss, a veteran lobbyist in Washington, and the biographer of former House Ways and Means Chairman Wilbur D. Mills. His career was cut short after 19 terms with a sex scandal with a stripper named Fannie Fox. But Wilbur Mills was a towering figure on Capitol Hill, and we'll talk with her about how it was in 1974 and how it is now in Washington almost 40 years later. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside our area. Please call 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. And thank you so much for your support this week, for keeping the programs alive and thriving on WRKF. Ray Strother is our guest now, political consultant extraordinaire, who is now retired in Bozeman, Montana. We have much to discuss with Ray Strother, who's handled the likes of Bill Clinton, Gary Hart, many Louisiana politicos through the years. Good morning, Ray Strother.
Good morning, Jim.
And also a Hall of Famer in the LSU Journalism School and the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame. I think Gus Wiles the only other one to be have both of those honors.
Oh, could be. I don't know. Could be.
And in Bozeman, Montana, where you are right now, your neighbor is Ted Turner, isn't he?
Yes, he's about 25 miles, 30 miles away, but yeah. See him occasionally with a starlet down on Main Street.
What kind of guy is Mr. Turner?
He's an interesting man. I've been to dinner at his house a couple of times, and he's a little abstract. One time he told me this great story. I won't prolong this, but we were talking, and he said, you know, I'm going to give you some financial advice. He said, everybody makes a big deal out of money. Everybody. He said, but after the first $1 billion, it really doesn't matter how much money you have. And I said, well, I'll remember that, Mr. Turner.
Well, he had $7 or $8 billion at one time, and he went down to one. But yeah, he's doing okay and owns more land in the United States than anybody else. So he's doing all right.
Yeah, I think he'll make it.
Uh-huh. Well, what do you make of this controversy regarding action in Syria?
Well, you know, I have so many mixed feelings about it. It seems to me, and this is my own personal feeling, seems to me that no matter who wins in that conflict, we lose. I don't know who the rebels are. No one knows who the rebels are. But they seem to be pliable, and they seem that they could be easily dominated by forces that we don't want anything to do with. Then we have Syrian government that's, if we want to call it a government, that's a dictatorship and brutal. And so I wish, personally, we were not involved in it in any way. I wish that's one we were taking a buy on like we have in some other places. I don't understand why we have to be the world's policeman on this. And I can't see anything good coming out of it.
Well, every day there's a new development regarding this, and the latest in today's New York Times. President Vladimir Putin has been many things to President Obama, a partner at times, an irritant more often, the host of the elusive Edward Snowden and the bored kid in the back of the classroom who offered so little on the administration's foreign policy goals that Mr. Obama canceled plans to hold a summit meeting in Moscow last week. Yet suddenly, Mr. Putin has eclipsed Mr. Obama as the world leader during driving the agenda in the Syria crisis. Is that what's going on?
This is played right into his hands. We sort of were able to dismiss Russia and for a long time after the dissolution of the Soviet Union. And now, all of a sudden, he's in the driver's seat, and he seems to be very smug about it. I read the editorial this morning. And unfortunately, I agreed with a lot of what he said, but a lot of what he said was fairly common sense.
Well, in the column from Nicholas Kristof, he writes, for decades, Syria has refused to confirm that it has chemical weapons. Now facing a limited strike, its position has abruptly changed to, oh, we do have chemical weapons after all, and we want to sign the Chemical Weapons Convention. We want to show them to the United Nations inspectors. In short, the mere flexing of military power has worked. That's according to Nicholas Kristof. So has Obama called their bluff?
Well, you know, also, Kristof is a militant, and he's always ready to go to war for, you know, for every disagreement we have in the world. But I don't know if Obama's called his bluff. That's the only good thing that's come out of this, I think, is they have admitted chemical weapons, although we've known they've had chemical weapons. They have admitted it. Now, according to Russia, the question is who used them. And the president presented, I thought, a good case of who would use them, that the they saw the rockets fired, they heard the traffic, they heard the military officers giving instructions. So, again, it's a no-win deal. You know, who's right and who's wrong? I think we're right in many ways, except we shouldn't be there to start with.
297-5633, if you want to join the conversation with Ray Strother, veteran political consultant who started right here in Louisiana, which has always been a hotbed of politics, and some of the most colorful races, as we know, in political history have occurred right here in our backyard. Now, 11 years ago, when the U.S. went to war against Iraq, every member of the Louisiana delegation voted for the military strike on Iraq. Mary Landrieu, Bill Jefferson, John Brough, Democrats and Republicans. Now, thus far, not one member of the delegation, and there are only two Democrats left, but not one has voted or has said they would vote in favor of going to war against Syria. What has happened in the last 11 years, Ray Strother?
I think maybe we learned a lesson. We should have learned a lesson from Iraq and Afghanistan. You know what the interesting thing I find of Afghanistan? I just read an interesting book I recommend to all your listeners, called Outpost by Jake Tapper. Wonderful book about the futility of the later stages of the Afghanistan war. And the only good thing I can think of that came out of either of those wars was a lesson, perhaps, that we shouldn't involve ourselves in Middle Eastern conflicts. And here we are. Here we are again in Syria. So maybe the Louisiana delegation learned its lesson. Maybe they're paying attention to the lessons they learned in the last misadventures that we got involved in. I don't think there's anyone today who could claim that Iraq was a good war, or that we did our country a favor by getting into it.
There are people who hold the line on that, though, who say it was a good thing. I suspect that if you ask Congressman Bill Cassidy, who was not in Congress at the time, he would say that it was a good thing. On this show, he has stated that he thinks George W. Bush was a vastly superior president to Bill Clinton.
Well, okay. I mean, that doesn't even require comment. No rational person would agree with him, I think of.
Well, what does it do as far as Senator Landrieu? She voted for Iraq. She has been on the fence regarding Syria. She's got a reelection campaign next year against Congressman Cassidy. How does she come down on this with the political implications?
Well, I think she has to be very careful. She's a Democrat in the South, and being a statewide elected Democrat in the South is virtually impossible. And she's managed to hang on to that seat. So she's going to, I think, swing a little to the right, whatever the right is right now in this Syrian adventure. She has to swing a little bit to the right, or endanger her reelection. I think you can sort of predict how she has to vote in the next few months. It'd be no surprise to me.
Well, she has a tough reelection fight, and I think also at one point worked for Blanche Lincoln, the senator from Arkansas, a conservative
right.
Democrat who went down in flames a few years ago. Some compare Landrieu and Lincoln. They came in about the same time. They've been moderate to conservative Democrats. And yet in their states, the Arkansas and Louisiana, those states have gone more conservative in recent times. It makes it tough for a Democrat, doesn't it?
Makes it almost impossible. I gave a talk not too long ago where I said that the only Democrat who has a possibility of being elected to statewide office in any of the southern states is a woman. There's still some crossover votes with women, and you can gather enough votes to perhaps win in some cases if you're a woman. But electing a Democrat to statewide office in the South now is virtually impossible, particularly since race became such a huge factor again with the election of Obama.
297-5633 or 877-217-5777 for Raymond Strother. Barry in Mid-City, good morning, Rabbi, and belated happy birthday.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the good wishes. And another great show, Jim. I'm wondering if Ray can comment on the letter to the New York Times by President Putin. First, about the New York Times publishing it, and second, will President Obama now publish in Russia, please?
That's a good question.
Well, Rabbi, you're hitting at the heart of something I believe very strongly in, which is freedom of the press. I do think the New York Times should have published it, and we shouldn't gauge whether or not they should publish it on whether or not the Russian press will publish something by Obama. We can't allow some other country to set our principles. And without freedom of the press, without the ability to publish and let people know what's going on, we're not a strong country. So I have to defend the New York Times to my last breath in that. Plus, I think it was very revealing. I'm glad they published it. I read it. I found it very interesting. What I found is a very smug Russian leader who's taken advantage of some missteps by this country, in my opinion. I think the president made some terrible errors when he drew a red line. And I think all of a sudden we've thrust Putin into a leadership position in the world. And I think that's very unfortunate. However, let me go back. Yes, the New York Times should publish it, whether or not the Russian press allows Obama to publish it.
Well, when reading the editorial from the president of Russia, if you did not know who wrote this, you might be startled at some of the remarks. Here's how he closes. There are big countries and small countries, rich and poor, those with long democratic traditions and those still finding their way to democracy. Their policies differ, too. We are all different, but when we ask for the Lord's blessings, we must not forget that God, capital G, created us equal. That's from the the president of Russia.
That's another funny thing, though, the so-called hardline communist now invoking God into his message. It's almost a slap in the face. It's very interesting.
Do you think he did this to get the goat of the president and maybe the American people, or did he do this because perhaps he's a believer in God?
No, I think he did that as an insult. He's trying to turn our own language back on us. He also talked about American exceptionalism, how that no one should consider themselves exceptional, that we're all God's children, etc. Most of that was his I told you so message, his smugness. That's why the New York Times should have published it. I think we know more about him today than we knew about him yesterday.
Well, it was President Bush, the previous President Bush, who, and I'm paraphrasing him, said several years ago that he looked into Putin's eyes and saw his soul, and he likes this guy. Should we like Vladimir Putin?
My opinion of Putin has not changed, except that he's perhaps a little bit more clever than I thought in manipulation. But he's an old KGB guy. So
yes, he is.
So who would be surprised?
Ray Strother is our guest, not high on Vladimir V. Putin. 297-5633 is your number outside the area, 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org. And we will talk with Ray Strother about some other matters, including his affinity for Louisiana State University, is still facing budget issues, and Governor Bobby Jindal in office for another couple of years, a man who has held the line on any tax increases. refusing to accept the federal Medicaid money under Obamacare. We'll talk with Ray Strother about this and more when we return after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and the legendary political consultant Ray Strother is with us. 297-5633 is your number. We'll return to the phone lines in just a moment, and I'm amused somewhat, Ray, as I suspect you are, that Vladimir Putin is invoking the name of God. And last week on this show, we had Edwin Edwards and Larry King, two great Americans, both of whom stated they were atheists.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's new to me. I always thought Edwards evoked God's name on occasion himself.
He did when he was running for office.
Well, that's a great shock to me. I didn't think Edwards would do that or say that.
Okay. Your friend Jack Germond and mine, who died a few weeks ago, he was on this show many times, and he, I think he delighted in telling people that he was a non-believer, and he said he would go to his grave that way, and he did.
Well, I got a call from his wife when he died, and I asked if there was going to be a ceremony or a service of any kind. She said, "Are you kidding?" And so, no, Jack was adamant in that. He was one of my best friends, and we spent a lot of time together, so it was a great blow. Of course, we all expected Jack to die. He was old, and he had lived a tough life, a hard life. Traveling fallen politicians around the country is a tough way to live. And I'll miss him desperately. I saw him not long ago. I talked to him a couple of days before he died. A great man, a man that I admired very much.
Well, he got 85 great years.
Yeah, he did. He lived to the fullest. One of our last conversations is, "Are you about ready for me to cook you some more barbecue?" I would go out to his house in West Virginia, and he had moved out to West Virginia so he could be by the track in Charlestown. And we would go to the racetrack and watch the horses and come back, and he'd cook barbecue. And so I'll miss him desperately.
Yeah, well, he was a guy who was a graduate of Baton Rouge High, and he should be in the LSU Journalism Hall of Fame. He went to Louisiana State University, graduated from Missouri. And he should be in the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame. And to this point, Jack Germond is not in either one. We'll have to see.
No, that's right. He should be. He should be. But, you know, there are a lot of deserving people. To defend the museum a little bit, the Hall of Fame, there are a lot of deserving people who should be in there, probably more than I. And they have a lot of time. They can put Jack in sooner or later. He would be a great addition.
But Jack won't be there.
But Jack won't be there, no.
Well, we commend.
The question is whether Jack would have come at all. Interesting.
I think
story.
He would have.
Well, maybe. He came to a class reunion, though. I'll never forget this because I met him in Baton Rouge when he'd come for his own class reunion, high school, I think, class reunion. And he left halfway through. And he said, "I won't stay in a place that's that racist." And obviously his old classmates had said some racist things, and Jack left. And I don't know if he ever went back to Louisiana after that. I don't know what your conversations with him were, but he was pretty bitter about that.
Well, he even wrote about it in one of his books, that he was perplexed. But he also wrote that some fine people were in that class of 1945, John Parker.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, he admired several people in that class. So that's not a blanket condemnation of that class.
297-5633, Jim at LSU for Ray Strother. Hi, Jim. You're on with Ray.
Raymond, this is Jim Wharton. I was chancellor when you made that spot for us back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it brought LSU back to the attention of the citizens of Louisiana. I want to thank you for that and tell you that I really appreciate your work over the years. And also to ask, how's that wonderful son of yours doing?
Dane's doing great. My son is Dane. My son Dane was editor of the Reveille, as I was. I think we may be the only two father sons who are ever editors of the Reveille. But he's doing great. He has two sons, lives in Potomac, Maryland, and is running the continuation of the political business that I retired from, Strother Consultants. And it's going great guns. Has a lot of prestigious clients and is living the tough life. I wish he were doing something else for a living. I wish we'd have trained him for law or something else, but we didn't. So he's doing the best he can with what I left him to work with.
That's wonderful.
Well, thank you, Jim Wharton. Let's talk with you soon, too.
Wharton's all right. A great man, incidentally. One day we'll have to talk about the call I got from him in when I was sitting at my table in Washington when he had a little trouble with my son. It's a funny story, Wharton.
Thank you, Jim.
All right.
Jim on Essen Lane. Jim, you're on with Ray Strother.
Good morning, gentlemen. I was born in 1945. I think you can probably envision the way I grew up and hit the age of 18. I believe the only reason I wasn't killed in Vietnam is I ended up with a 4F and a lottery number way above 300. But I wanted to tell you how disturbed I am by the rather matter-of-fact statement that Ray makes about the solid conservative South and the condition of our democracy. Trying to use any of the inflammatory words, I would like to make this position or this statement. In the past 45 years, the law and policy of this country has eliminated the tax base of this country and has not protected American jobs, but in fact protected maximization of profit of global enterprises. Now, I, for one, am absolutely flabbergasted that we're not really talking about removing this form of government and this this economic model. And Ray, I'd like to make one statement to you.
All right. Well, hold on. Don't go anywhere. I want Ray to respond. He took exception to some remarks you made earlier, but what are your thoughts about the sentiments expressed by Jim on Essen Lane?
I'm not sure I could hear him that well, Jim. Will you paraphrase for me? I'd be happy
to. Jim, I'll let you finish. When you talk about an economic model, what are you referring to?
Well, this is what I'm saying, gentlemen. Free market capitalism has been represented to the American people as the greatest thing ever because of our highest standard of living achieved in the 50s and the 60s. I would argue with you that it was not capitalism that produced the middle class. It was the Fair Labor Standards Act and World War II that destroyed the economies of the rest of the world.
All right. He says capitalism, I'm paraphrasing, is overrated. I don't think he's alone.
I know where he's coming from. I was just for his information. I also had a number over 300, and I was born 5 years before you, 1940. What we have is people saying that capitalism is the end for everything. It's the answer to everything, and it's not. The middle class came about in America through a lot of different influences. One was the labor movement. The labor movement was very responsible for creating the middle class. World War II was very responsible for creating the middle class. Let's give some of our leaders a lot of credit, too. Eisenhower, Truman, Roosevelt. I mean, they were great. They were great in developing a middle class for this country. I'm not qualified to argue economics, except that here I am, a kid who had to hitchhike to college for a scholarship. With that, I think I had $40 I think that's the only money I was ever given by my parents. And I retired a few years ago, and I live quite well. And only this country allowed that. So the economic model for America, I think, goes astray. I think it swings back and forth. For example, this deregulation, I think, is a terrible era. I think it's some of the financial deregulation has created some of the heartaches and headaches we have now. But as a whole, our system works, and it works well. But we must have a balance between capitalism and labor must have a better balance than we have now. It's swung too far into the capitalist side, in my opinion. So we don't probably disagree as much as you think.
Dan downtown. Dan, you'll be our last caller for Ray Strother. Good morning, Dan.
Morning. Mr. Strother, do you think as far as capitalism goes that Herbert Hoover had it right? The only thing wrong with capitalism is capitalists. They're too damn greedy.
I think that could be it. One time my father told me, who was an old union guy, he said, everybody jumps on us because we strike and we want more money. He said, I can't remember the company ever coming saying, may I give you a raise, please? That never happened. So there has to be, Hoover was right there. Maybe that's the only thing he was ever right on, but he was right there. Anyway, I want to recommend a book. There's a book about how Hoover influenced American politics, and he did a lot of good things after he was after he left office, called The President's Club. Read it. I highly recommend it.
All right. Lastly, the situation at LSU, which you have discussed on this program a few times, the old war school, the flagship University of Louisiana, has faced significant budget cuts over the last several years. And the governor has taken an approach where he is against any new taxes, against renewals of taxes. He has starved the government in a way that conservatives, I'm sure, admire. And your thoughts about how this has affected, one way or the other, the stability of the main university in this state and the university that proclaims itself to be the flagship University of Louisiana.
Well, this is a heated subject for me. I think the governor has forced Louisiana to eat its seed corn. Education is the future. And he had ambitions to run for president. His ambitions came before LSU and came before all the universities in the state. It came before anything else. He thought he could impress conservatives around the country by cutting. And he cut the future of Louisiana. He pared the future. When you cut LSU, which is the engine of growth for the state, when you cut the other state universities where people struggle to get an education, and you make it harder rather than easier to get an education, you shouldn't be celebrated for your work in the state. I hope his name never goes on a bridge anyplace.
Thank you, Raymond Strother. I appreciate it. Let's talk soon. See you next month.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757 outside Baton Rouge, and Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. We're joined by Kay Goss. She has served at the highest levels of state and national government, first as Senior Assistant for Intergovernmental Relations to Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton for a decade, and then Chief Deputy Arkansas State Auditor. She is based in Washington now, a prominent lobbyist and a biographer of another Arkansan, Wilbur D. Mills, a man who was House Ways and Means Committee Chairman, arguably the most powerful person in Washington short of the president from 1958 to 1974. He was in Congress for 38 years and was Ways and Means Chairman under Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon. Good morning, Kay Goss.
Good morning. How are you, Jim?
Doing well. Now, your book is entitled Mr. Chairman, The Life and Legacy of Wilbur D. Mills, a man born in 1909 in Searcy, Arkansas, who ultimately graduated from Harvard Law School and became the go-to person to get things done in Washington. His career ended in scandal. Why don't we start with that?
Okay.
What about the Fannie Fox episode?
Well, one of the reasons that I wrote the book, Jim, is because of a belief that a person's life should be judged based on its total body of work and not on its lowest point. Unfortunately, Mr. Mills, due to the stress of how much he put on himself more than anything else, and the fact that he had no hobbies and couldn't relax, started drinking more and more as the power of Congress and especially Ways and Means declined during the early 70s. And by 1974, he was in trouble with the disease of alcoholism. And so one evening he was out with friends Mrs. Mills was at home because she had fallen in their apartment, tripping on a cord, and on the way home at 2 a.m. in the morning, the park police stopped the car because his driver, a former President Nixon aide, could not find the way to turn on the light. So you can imagine they were in some trouble. And Fannie Fox was one of those inside the car, and she jumped out into the tidal basin. So it was pretty dramatic. And, you know, Mr. Mills apologized for it. He went back home in a few days because he was in the middle of a campaign. And he always had a great sense of humor, even about himself. And so his first speaking engagement back in Arkansas was at the Junior Chamber of Commerce. And he said, "Well, I've learned my lesson. You shouldn't drink champagne with foreigners." Well, people sort of laughed that off, and he was reelected 60% of the vote.
Yeah, I was a kid in Arkansas at the time, in Little Rock. I remember that. Reelected to a 19th term, his final term.
Yes.
And the Argentinian bombshell Fannie Fox, the former Annabella Battistella, she ended up in his company once again, and that was the end of the trail for Wilbur Mills.
That's right.
What happened the second
Fannie
time?
Fannie Fox's husband, Eduardo Battistella, talked to Mr. Mills into going with him to Boston. And after she had performed at the Pilgrim Theater on a Saturday night, Mr. Mills made an appearance and said that he thought that she was headed for great stardom or something like along those lines. So my husband was his chief of staff, and so we got a call on Sunday telling us what had happened, and it was a sad day because, you know, we knew, you know, he was very careful his whole life, very high morals, very religious, you know, but, you know, how could you explain or how could you understand something like that? So, you know, his staff and his family and his friends and constituents were all disappointed, but all very sympathetic because they knew he was ill. And he went into Bethesda Naval Hospital immediately, and he was there for about 6 weeks. And he came out, he was feeling really good and physically better than he had for years. And he had one trip up, and they found him in the Waldorf Astoria passed out. So finally he realized on every level of his consciousness that he was an alcoholic and that he needed treatment. So he spent the next February, March, April, and part of May at Palm Beach Institute in West Palm Beach, Florida, getting treatment. And Mrs. Mills, also suffering somewhat from that disease, went down, and she was received treatment for 6 weeks. So together they were they came back to Washington, and of course, after undergoing that kind of an event, a series, actually, you know, they were humiliated. They had humiliated, or he had humiliated himself.
We'll talk more with Kay Goss. Her book is Mr. Chairman, The Life and Legacy of Wilbur D. Mills, back in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and veteran politico in Arkansas and in Washington, D.C., Kay Goss is with us. She served as Associate Federal Emergency Management Agency Director from 1994 to 2001, and she has a long history in Arkansas as an associate of then-Governor Bill Clinton. And you heard in the segment previously, her husband was the Chief of Staff for Wilbur D. Mills, 38 years in Congress, and from 1958 to 1974, Chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, and his career ended in scandal. But during those years he was chairman of House Ways and Means, Kay Goss, he was a player on Capitol Hill like few, if any, others. And the word was that he and Richard Nixon were actually working on health care reform back in the early 1970s.
Yes, that's very true. He and President Nixon and Senator Ted Kennedy worked together on that. And Mr. Mills always said after, you know, he recovered from alcohol or was in the recovery process from alcohol, he never drank again after he had the treatment and spent the next 17 years really working on health issues and people who were in recovery themselves or trying to get people into recovery. So health care, even from the time he was county judge in Arkansas, was a big concern for him. But when President Nixon was in, he and Kennedy and Nixon launched this national initiative on health care. And then when Gerald Ford became president, he was even stronger in that regard and more adamant about it. Mr. Mills was trying to pass it through Ways and Means, and he lacked one vote. After his recovery, when he looked back assessing his career, he said he thought that was the one time when his alcoholism had impacted his effectiveness as a leader of Ways and Means. Because he said, you know, in previous times, he would have been able to have secured that one vote if he had been able to work harder and focus more.
Well, during that time, Russell Long was a towering figure in the Senate from Louisiana. And
they were great friends.
Chairman of the Finance Committee, and he too battled alcoholism. That was not unique to Mills and Long. A lot of politicos in Washington, I suppose then and now, but especially then, they liked to unwind after a tough day in Congress.
Right. Well, you know, Jim, and back in those days, they stayed in Washington for months at a time. So there was more socializing among the members of Congress, and I have a theory that that helped them be more bipartisan and actually more productive on legislation.
Well, they were certainly friends, even though their party affiliation was different. And here you had a Democrat, Mills, and a Republican in Richard Nixon who were working together for a common goal. Today, that does not happen.
That's right.
Why is the atmosphere, why has it changed so much?
Well, I think one of the things is that, you know, they don't really spend time with each other except on the floor or when they're doing sound bites. But, you know, for example, Russell Long and Mr. Mills were both very open to discussion with everybody, and everybody was a potential friend, and so they started from that perspective rather than looking for differences among themselves. They looked for common ground. And actually, speaking of the Long family, this might be of interest as well. Mr. Mills, while he was a student at Harvard, was asked to be head of the welcoming committee for Huey Long when he came to Arkansas. A little history lesson. Hattie Carraway from Arkansas became the first woman ever elected to the Senate, and she was up for re-election. And Huey Long came to assist her, and she had almost no support for re-election. And our leading senator in Arkansas was Joe T. Robinson. He was majority leader and a very close friend of Roosevelt's, and Long was considering running against Roosevelt for when he ran for re-election, and so Hattie Carraway was supporting him for that. So he came to Arkansas, and he made 10 appearances, one of which was in Searcy, and Mr. Mills met him at the train, took him to his hotel, and he said that Huey was in a sort of bad mood. So Mr. Mills asked him if there was anything at all he could get for him, and Huey mostly said, no thanks or whatever. And Mr. Mills said, well, would you like a drink? And he said, yes, he would like a drink. So Mr. Mills went to one of the local moonshiners and brought back some alcohol. And he said when he picked him up later for the speech, he was in a fine mood. And he said he went out and he spoke in behalf of Hattie. And Mr. Mills said there probably weren't five people there outside the Mills family who were supporting Hattie. But when he left, and he said there were about 10,000 people that came in this little rural community, and he said when Huey finished, he had every single vote in the palm of his hand.
And wasn't she reelected?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
The book is Mr. Chairman, The Life and Legacy of Wilbur D. Mills from Searcy, actually from Kensett, Arkansas, and then migrated to the urban center of Searcy.
That's right.
And
now, you know, Kensett's about, it's a little less than 2,000 population, and Searcy's about 20.
I know. Home of Harding University, which is where Ken Starr went to college.
That's true.
a great irony.
I love this Arkansas history.
Yeah.
Talking about.
Well, Wilbur Mills worked, as I stated, with Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon. Who were the presidents, or who was there a president who impressed him most?
Well, you know, of course, Roosevelt was overwhelming in his presence, and so Mr. Mills liked him a lot. He said Roosevelt wouldn't take no for an answer. One time, Chairman Glass of Banking Committee took Mr. Mills with him when he first went to Congress down to the White House to visit with Mr. Roosevelt, and it got around to the question of whether or not a slum clearance bill that Roosevelt was supporting was going to pass, and he asked Mr. Glass, and he said, oh, yes, Mr. President, it's going to pass. And he looked at Mr. Mills and asked him, what do you think? And Mr. Mills said, well, Mr. President, I don't believe it's going to pass. And he just exploded. He said, did the constituents in Arkansas send you up here to be this negative? Mr. Mills said, no, they sent me up here to tell you the truth. And so eventually the bill did fail, and he said Roosevelt called him up, and he said, you know, son, I'm going to need to have you come down to the White House more often because I need to find out what's actually going on up there in Congress. And Truman, of course, was, you know, they had a lot in common because Truman had also been a county official in Missouri. So they talked a lot about that. And then also Truman was always regular in his attendance at Sam Rayburn, Speaker of the House Sam Rayburn's sort of legendary Board of Education. And they played poker together a little bit, but Mr. Mills lost so many times to Truman that he stopped playing with him.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, Eisenhower was a little different for Mr. Mills in that some of the spending programs, like, you know, the interstate highway mm-hmm. system and some Defense Education Acts, were quite expensive. And so they were always struggling in ways and means to get the conservative votes to support the revenue stream that would be needed for some of those initiatives.
The book is Mr. Chairman, The Life and Legacy of Wilbur D. Mills, from biographer Kay Goss, who worked closely for then-Governor Bill Clinton of Arkansas. And in 1974, when Wilbur Mills was reelected after having been scandalized with the Tidal Basin affair in Little Rock, a little north of there, in Fayetteville, Bill Clinton was running for Congress. Mills' last election, Clinton's first. Clinton lost a tough one by less than 2 percentage points to John Paul Hammerschmidt. Was Clinton affected at all or influenced by Wilbur Mills?
Well, you know, Bill Clinton made his famous trip representing Boys State to Washington and met President Kennedy in 1963. Well, he also met Senator Fulbright, and he met Mr. Mills and the rest of our delegation. The people from New York used to tease Arkansas and say, Arkansas counts its delegation by the chairmanships it has, and New York counts by the number of congressmen they have. But back in those days, our members were chairman of almost all the committees. But I think he spent the most time with Senator Fulbright and with Chairman Mills. I am pretty sure that some of the third way approach that President Clinton had was also he noticed that in the modeling that Mr. Mills did. Mr. Mills was, for example, known to go to members' districts who were members of the Ways and Means Committee who were Republicans and brag on their work, not during election time when the campaigns were heated or whatever, but during the off times when, he would speak in their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Connable is one of those who was a Republican from Rochester, New York.
We got a question from Holly in the Garden District who wants to know how Mills stood on race issues back in the 50s and 60s. He was in Congress when Central High was integrated. He was in Congress mm-hmm. when the Civil Rights Bill was passed, the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
How was he on those issues?
Well, it was I looked at all of that, especially because I wanted to see, if he had made any statements or anything other than his votes. And I quizzed him on it pretty extensively. And just for the broader picture, his father was chairman of the school board when that issue arose after Brown versus Board of Education in 54. And the question was, shall we build separate high schools or build separate schools? And he said, no, we're not going to do that in our community, and became, the first community to actually integrate and to refuse to build separate schools. And so that was the environment that Mr. Mills was raised in. And he also, when it came time to sign the Southern Manifesto, he told Sam Rayburn, he said, I'm going to sign the Southern Manifesto. And Rayburn basically said, well, don't do it because you won't be reelected. So he hesitantly signed it.
My guess, though, is that he voted against a lot of these
yes, he
measures.
Did.
And
he did.
And so history in that respect will view him as a man who may have been in step with his times but was not in step with the future. But
So the biographer, a Senator Fulbright ran into that same situation. All of the Arkansas delegation voted in the same way mm-hmm. as a block with the rest of the South.
With a few exceptions.
One.
And that one was?
It's a Congressman Reese.
Okay. Now, Wilbur Mills, when I was in high school, they named the freeway through Little Rock after him, and I go mm-hmm. back on occasion, and, I don't see any acknowledgement that it's the Wilbur Mills Freeway. He's kind of been...
Well, there is now.
Okay. But
now, the state legislature passed an act forcing the highway department to put the sign back.
Why did they take it down?
I don't know. I haven't talked to the head of the highway department.
Was it because of the sex scandal?
No. It was up for a long time after that.
Well, there's no doubt, though. He was tainted by that, maybe unfairly. But when you ask people around the country, probably people in this area, they know him more for Fannie Fox than as chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee.
Yeah, I think that's unfortunate. I mean, he's certainly responsible for everything he did during those times. And, someone said they thought and cited some pretty good information to the effect that he was actually set up by a lobbyist who was in an industry that was going to be taxed more. But Mr. Mills' approach, I think, and attitude about it was the one that I would adopt, and that is he should never have been in that situation. He should never have put himself in that situation in the first place to be set up.
Now, you work with the Clinton Foundation. How mm-hmm. is that going?
Oh, it's great. I'm so proud of the work that President Clinton has done post-presidency. And, for example, in the area of AIDS around the world, he has over 10 million people that he's providing medication to right now that depend upon that for their life.
Was Hillary going to run for president in 2016?
I don't know. I think she'd be an excellent candidate and an excellent president. and I really like her a lot. But I don't know about that.
Well, here's the
she hasn't told me anything.
The dream race: Hillary Clinton's nominated by the Democrats, and Bobby Jindal's nominated by the Republicans in 2016. There, how about that?
Friends and neighbors.
Friends and neighbors, but they may only be a few miles apart in
That's
geography,
right.
But in ideology and in life experience, there's a chasm between those two.
That's right.
Well, Kay Goss, you're a lobbyist. I understand Billy Tozan is working with you as well.
That's right. I just gravitate to people from Louisiana always.
Well, we look forward to another visit from you sometime soon, and the book is the definitive biography about Wilbur D. Mills, Mr. Chairman, The Life and Legacy of Wilbur D. Mills. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jim.
We'll be in touch soon. We'll be back tomorrow. For Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.